Thanks for joining us today on The School Care Matters. In this series, we're unpacking the Indiana Department of Education's 7 social-emotional competencies. I'm Shane Presley from the School Care Team, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Tina Wooldridge and Karen Novinger from the School Care Team. Both Tina and Karen are social-emotional wellness specialists and regional trainers for the Sources of Strength Wellness Program in Northeast Indiana. Welcome. This is the second in a series of discussions about the SEL competencies. Before we jump into talking about the first competency, let's recap what we talked about the last time. One of the highlights that I remember is that paradigm propels practice. Mm-hmm. I recall you saying that if teachers and parents are going to invest the time into developing their understanding of social-emotional learning, they should first believe that it's worth their time.
That's right. And that if we're struggling to believe that, it's important to remember that regardless of how much time, talent, and energy we invest in our lesson plans and our classroom management skills, in order to be ready to learn, students must attend to social and emotional needs first. Mm. And we pointed out that employability skills and SEL competencies are virtually one and the same.
Mm. So it also struck me when you said that students learn, apply, and practice SEL skills in the same way they learn other academic skills. Through modeling, instruction, and practice, both inside and outside the classroom.
Yeah, that's right, Shane. We need to attend to our own well-being before we can attend to the well-being of our students, which means that educators must engage in the development and modeling of these skills, as well as expecting their students to learn and apply them. Finally, we mentioned that there are strategies and activities that can be explicitly modeled, taught, and practiced in the classroom. And that brings us to today's discussion, which is modeling and teaching the first SEL competency, sensory motor integration.
Hmm. So what exactly is sensory motor integration?
Well, our definition is the ability to sense and recognize sensations in the body and how they connect to emotions.
Hmm. My understanding is that was not one of the original competencies in the framework developed by Castle. Why did Indiana decide to include it in its framework?
Well, we mentioned last time that the competencies build on one another.
Right.
Sensory motor integration is a sort of building block that helps repair lower brain regions that may have been compromised in a student's early years. This can happen if their developing attachment is disrupted through neglect, abuse, or other adverse conditions. Mm-hmm. But regardless of a person's early childhood experiences, these intervention strategies are healthy for all students. And they lead, but regardless of a person's early childhood experiences, these intervention strategies are healthy for all students, and they lead to more effective self-regulation.
Interesting. So we talked last time about how we measure competency. What are the skills or indicators that let us know that we or our students are competent in sensory motor integration?
Mm-hmm. There are a couple of important indicators that someone has developed the skill of sensory motor integration. First, they'll be able to differentiate between bodily sensations that are related to physical and emotional stimuli.
Hmm.
And second, they'll be able to identify the location of sensations in the body that relate to emotions.
All right, so let's unpack the first indicator.
Sure. So if I'm competent in sensory motor integration, that means I can sense what I'm feeling in my body and determine whether those sensations result from something physical or something emotional. For example, if I have a headache, it could be because I'm dehydrated, or it could be a result of anxiety.
Sure.
The first is a physical stimulus, and the second is emotional. But before I can identify the cause, I have to slow down and be attentive to my body. So Shane, if I asked you right now, what are you feeling in your body? What would you say?
Probably a rumble in my stomach.
Now think about why you're experiencing those sensations.
Why is that important?
Well, because being able to identify whether a physical feeling is due to a physical need or a response to something external that's triggering our emotions is the first step to understanding how to respond to and regulate those emotions.
Hmm.
Ultimately, we and our students should be able to develop a sort of go-to list of strategies we can access when our emotions begin to distract or disrupt us.
So maybe I'm hungry, or maybe I'm stressed about schoolwork?
Yeah, so that's just the point. Sensory motor integration is about distinguishing between possible sources of our sensations and sorting out physical and emotional stimuli.
Okay, that makes sense. So how do we develop sensory motor integration in our lives and in our teaching practice?
Yeah, the same strategies and activities that we use with our students, which we'll talk about in a minute, work for us as well. One activity is called body mapping. So we begin with a simple outline of the body and then a set of colored pencils. So you choose a color that seems to represent a specific emotion, and you write that emotion where you think you experience it in your body. In fact, let's try it. We've got a sheet here of body outlines, and here are some colored pencils.
Thank you.
So I'm going to list an emotion, and then I want you to quickly choose a color and then write that word on the body where you think you would experience it.
All right.
So let's start with happiness. Okay. And how about sadness?
Okay.
And anger. And let's do one more. How about shame?
Okay, got it.
Good. So when we do this with a classroom full of students, it's really interesting to take a look at how they're similar and how they're different. So Shane, I don't know if you knew that specific emotions activate a temperature change in specific areas of the body. Scientists conducted a study where they asked people to color in a body outline, just like the one that we just completed, to show where and how they felt emotions in their bodies. They used emotion words, which we just did, when they told stories, when they showed facial expressions, and when they played movie clips. The participants reported where in their bodies they sensed a temperature change in response to those stimuli, and what emerged was an emotions body map, revealing the universal nature of how we experience certain emotions in our bodies. If you simply search emotions body map on Google, you'll easily find several examples. So here's one now. So have a look at that emotions body map.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I like how happiness is literally a full body experience.
Right.
So how do we model sensory motor integration for our students?
Well, in the same way we model other behaviors for our students. We start by honestly reflecting on how we are doing in each of the competency areas and work to develop our own social emotional responses. Then we share our tools and experiences as appropriate with our students. And SEL is a lifelong process. Our students learn from us, but I think we can learn from our students as well. Unfortunately, we've all seen, or maybe even been, adults who demand respect from students by using disrespectful attitudes, tones, and words. And I don't say that to shame anyone, but simply to bring to light the reality that we aren't always very good at modeling.
Right.
So with many of these competencies, modeling looks like simply being intentional about explaining and demonstrating what we already do internally. From our earlier example, I might say to my students, I have a headache. I wonder if I've had enough water today. Yeah, I think I have, so maybe I'm feeling anxious about the dentist appointment I have tomorrow. And then I could state what strategy I intend to use to manage that anxiety. I might even ask them which strategies they use when they feel anxious. So I'm combining modeling with teaching while empowering my students.
I like that idea. I can see how that would destigmatize and normalize the experience of anxiety.
Exactly. And by bringing my thoughts out into the open, I model for my students the process of identifying a bodily sensation, a headache, and determining whether it's the result of physical or emotional stimuli.
So what are some strategies and activities we can use to explicitly teach sensory motor integration?
If we want to see our students connecting their bodily sensations and their emotions, we have to begin with the assumption that many students and adults could use some support in developing their emotional vocabularies.
I agree with that.
One simple tool for fostering this is word walls, displaying bodily sensations and emotion words. There are also some great resources online, including an emotion sensation wheel that lists common emotions and sensations that often accompany those emotions. I have one here. This is an example from Lindsay Brayman's website. In the center of the wheel, we have the most basic emotions. So we have anger, disgust, sadness, happiness, surprise, and fear. In the next layer out, we have a more expanded list of varying degrees of each of those emotions. So for example, if I'm feeling surprise, I can be more specific. Am I feeling shock, confusion, awe, or excitement? And then on the outer ring, there are common sensations that correlate with each emotion. So if I determine that I'm experiencing shock, then I might be feeling jumpy or have sweaty palms.
Can the wheel be used in the other direction?
Definitely. So if you can identify a bodily sensation you're experiencing from the outer ring, it could be helpful in naming the specific emotion you're feeling.
I see. So if my heart is racing, I might be feeling aggression or anger?
That's right. So it's a helpful tool to use as we and our students develop competence around differentiating between bodily sensations that are related to physical and emotional stimuli and identifying the location of sensations in the body that relate to emotions.
Mm. What about the strategies like breathing exercises or calming stations in the classroom?
Yeah, those are really great ideas, and we will get to those later. We really want to make a distinction between each of the seven competencies. So when we talk about sensory motor integration, we're only at the beginning of a process that eventually leads to regulating our emotions. Mm. But one example of a technique that develops sensory motor integration is a grounding exercise that's referred to as 5-4-3-2-1. Although it qualifies as a coping strategy, which is an indicator that someone has developed the skill of self-regulation, it's also an important way to expand our awareness of what our senses are currently experiencing. So let's do it now. I'll ask you the question and then you respond. Are you ready?
Yes.
So notice and identify five things you see around you.
Computer, water bottle, a mouse, a pen, and a laptop.
Great. Notice and identify four things you can touch around you.
Well, of course, my face mask, a wallet, a pen, and more paperwork.
Now, notice and identify three things that you hear. Try to focus on things you can hear outside of your body.
I hear the air conditioner. I hear your voice. And I hear some chatter outside in the hallway.
Good job. Now notice and identify two things that you can smell. Sometimes this is challenging, but maybe you can still smell soap on your hands.
Hmm. Well, I can still smell hand sanitizer on my hands. And beyond that, that's a tough one.
That is a difficult one, especially when you're indoors. Let's try one more. Notice and identify one thing that you can taste.
I can taste my spearmint gum.
Great. So this simple exercise grounds us in the present moment and allows us to focus on our sensory experience as a precursor to noticing how those sensations may relate to our emotional state.
That's so interesting. Now, we've been talking about sensory experiences, but what about the motor integration part of this competency?
Mm-hmm. Rocking, balancing, fine motor activity, touch, and temperature regulation are all examples of activities that can be adapted in order to be age appropriate. So in addition, a Google search of brain integration exercises will give you ideas for how to promote sensory motor integration and readiness to learn. Switching periodically to using the non-dominant hand for writing or drawing is a simple example. The website for Integrated Learning Strategies published an article a few years ago about crossing the midline activities.
The midline?
The midline is just what it sounds like. It's an imaginary line that equally divides our bodies from head to toe. Midline crossing activities are not only associated with sensory integration and body awareness, they also foster higher learning skills such as speech, language, handwriting, and reading, as well as math sequencing and critical thinking. Midline crossing activities help students to retain information, maintain attention and focus, and listen to and follow directions. What parent or teacher wouldn't love to see all of those increase at home and in the classroom?
Right. So do these activities require planning and preparation?
Well, some of the activities you'll find on the internet require common props, such as stretchy bands or balls, but many of them only require the body. An example for younger children is a pat a cake activity, which is even more effective if you are reciting something while you participate. I remember the one from when I was a child. My mother went to CCC to see what she could CCC, and there was a whole clapping exercise that went along with it, along with a partner. For older students, lifting the knee and slightly slapping it with the opposite hand for a few rounds crosses the midline. All of those activities can serve as a quick brain break, either routinely scheduled or when the teacher notices that students seem to be fidgety or distracted. The exercises help all students become more ready to learn, so that even if the target audience is a student who experienced trauma or developmental delays in early childhood, as with all social-emotional learning, the strategies are universally beneficial.
I think we have a pretty good understanding of what sensory-motor integration is, as well as some ways to model it and explicitly teach it in the classroom. What's the goal of becoming more competent in sensory-motor integration?
Remember, we referred to it as a building block. So once I'm able to differentiate between bodily sensations that are related to physical and emotional stimuli and identify the location of sensations in the body that relate to emotions, I'm ready to identify an actual emotion, which is called insight.
I look forward to hearing about insight in the next episode. As always, thank you for joining us, Tina and Karen.